Hello. Welcome to Blacter. Join me as I examine the best of black artists in my quest to becoming one myself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blacter. I'm your host, Gabe Moses. In this episode, you'll be hearing the second interview of Season 1. I had the privilege to talk with actor Lawrence Gilliard Jr. I, quote-unquote, met Lawrence through a masterclass we did for my school back in June. Throughout the interview, we talk about what led him to his success in television and film, black representation in the arts, and what motivates him as a black actor in this industry. Enjoy. All right. Hello, Lawrence. Thank you so much for joining me today to talk about your experience in the arts. First, I want to kind of talk about, if you want to talk about your life growing up and how you got into the arts and education.
All right. How did I get into the arts? So at a very young age, I mean, I was always interested in the arts, particularly music. Always wanted to be a drummer. And I am actually a self-taught drummer, but I took some lessons with a few drummer buddies of mine. You know, they taught me a few things. But when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a drummer. But everybody wanted to be a drummer, you know, because the girls like all the drummers.
Yeah.
So, so there was always too many drummers in the bands. So I never got picked to play drums. And I ended up getting picked to play the clarinet at the time. And I have to also say, you know, I live in Baltimore. I grew up in Baltimore. I'm originally from New York, and I kind of claim them both as home. I have a place in Baltimore and I have a place in New York, and I go back and forth. But I was born in New York, and then my mom moved to Baltimore when I was really young. So at that time I was in school in Baltimore, and there was the Baltimore School for the Arts, which had just opened at that time, and they were recruiting for their school. Looking for, you know, going around and actually looking for students. Now everyone's trying to get into that school. It's a well-known art school in the country, one of the best art schools in the country. But back then it was just starting out. So they came to my school. They came to my middle school, which was at the time one of the worst middle schools in Baltimore City. And recruiting. And I said, you know, I want to go there to that school. So I went, I auditioned. And which I was told not to audition by my band teacher at the time, because he's like, you know, you're going to be auditioning with kids who've been taking private lessons since they were 3 and 4 years old. So don't do it. But if you want to go and embarrass yourself. So anyway, I went, and at the time I didn't really read music, but I learned this song by ear and I played the song and I got into the school. And that was my way into the arts. That was my first venture into the arts at the Baltimore School for the Arts, playing clarinet. 4 years later, I got accepted into Juilliard. So I went to Juilliard as a clarinet, classical clarinet major. and I studied there. And it was there, I guess I could say it was there. Well, I wasn't necessarily bitten by the acting bug there, but I did go to all of their, the drama department's performances. So what ended up happening while I was at Juilliard, I'm playing music. And then one day, you know, they say in the classical music world, they're like, the day that you wake up and you don't want to practice anymore, that's when you know there's a problem. There's
right, yeah.
So one day I woke up, I didn't want to practice. And, you know, I was kind of going crazy a little bit at the time in school, because I'm like, this is all I ever wanted to do. And suddenly I'm feeling like I don't want to do it. It's hard to, you know, to motivate myself to do it. I didn't know what was going on. Of course, now looking back in retrospect, what ended up happening was I just got bored with the music. You know, classical music is a very structured format, you know, a very specific thing. And, you know, what ended up happening was it just wasn't big enough, broad enough for me. I needed to do more. I needed to express myself more. I didn't know that while I was going through it at the time, but when I did realize, okay, I don't want to sit in an orchestra for the rest of my life anymore and do that life. And I started thinking about what else did I enjoy. Then I realized, well, you know, when I was in high school, I always went to all my high school drama performances. And I went to all my college drama performances. And I was always fascinated by actors, you know, how they could transform into different characters, be something different on stage, but be, you know, normal. I would call it what I thought back then. I was like, they're normal when they're in class, you know, but when they're on stage, they're different people. How do they do that? I was always a bit fascinated by it. So one summer when I was, I think it was my sophomore year at Juilliard, that between my sophomore year and junior year at Juilliard, I went and I took a just an intensive, an acting intensive over the summer at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And the one thing that I did learn there was that I had a passion for acting. You know, I didn't really know what I was doing, what I was learning, anything like that, but I did figure out that with acting, I could do more, could express more. It felt just like the sky was the limit. I'm like, you know, if I can really learn how to do this and train and learn how to do this, the sky's sort of the limit as far as expression. And, you know, and who am I talking to? Like, you know, all these things were probably, I'm like, I'm sitting here, I'm playing classical clarinet. Who am I reaching?
Right.
You know, how much can I really do? It just wasn't enough for me. But through acting, I'm like, I can reach everyone. I can reach you, you know, and I can use this medium to educate and to, you know, there's just so much more that I felt like I could do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that was when I decided I was gonna go for it, you know, go for acting. And then I got into the after that I got into the acting studio, which was taught by this, which was run by a guy named James Price. And I studied Meisner under him. He studied under Sandy Meisner. So I studied Meisner under him at his school, at the acting studio. And then I booked my first movie, Straight Out of Brooklyn. And that was a crazy story because, like, Straight Out of Brooklyn, it was back in the days when they were still doing just open calls in New York City. You could just go and stand in line and audition for an independent movie, you know? And that's what I did. I went, I stood in line for an hour or so. The line was around the block, and I finally get in and I do my audition. And then I find out about a week later, they hit me up and I got the role, the part, and it was the lead in the movie. That movie ended up going to Sundance and winning the special jury prize. And that was my foot in, you know, that was my first experience in movies. And my foot in the door of the world of acting, which I still feel like, you know, I still because I come from music first, and I still feel in my heart of hearts, I have a musician soul, you know, like music I just get. Acting, I have to work hard. I'm not a fan of reading. I was a math, you know, I was a math kid when I was in school, so you know, music and math, they kind of they mix well, but I wasn't a big, I'm not a big reader, so you know, I have to work for acting. But I love it, you know, I love being on stage, I love being in front of the camera, but I feel like an imposter a bit in this world.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, yeah, 'cause you kind of are in a way, in
Yeah.
a sense, you know, you're taking on these roles that aren't you, or you're portraying something that maybe you don't agree with or that you've never experienced before. And it's like, how do you kind of navigate into that, you know?
Well, you know, all that's all technique. I wouldn't say, you know, what's amazing about the actor, what's amazing about an actor is that, and what's crazy about actors is their ability to make their brains believe something that isn't true.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit psychotic,
Yeah.
But that's what makes an actor. That's the genius of an actor, or the blessing that, you know, God blessed an actors with, the ability to do that. Just thinking about it sounds crazy. I'm going to make myself believe that I'm something else. It's childish in a way. And it's just nutty, but we have the ability to do that, to make our brains believe we're something else, to make our brains believe we're in a whole different scenario, some false scenario, and we make it true. You know what I mean? It's almost like a superpower. Think of
Yeah,
it, you
yeah.
know?
It's almost, yeah, it's like an extra
So,
muscle.
yeah, you know, so, I'm grateful that I have the ability and that I can do that. So in that way, I'm not an imposter. But it's like in the way that when I'm in a room full of actors who's trained as who knew when they were kids, when you talk to them, they're like, I always knew I wanted to be an actor. I love it, and I always want. And they're the ones who, they love reading and they love researching and they love all the things that, that acting is all about, all the technical things and all of the behind the scenes things that we don't all that most people don't know. They love it, and for me, that's work. Doing all the research and stuff. I mean, I enjoy doing that, but breaking down scripts and breaking down characters and all that kind of stuff, that's work, and I do it because I don't want to suck. So I do it. I do it. And I go deep. I go all in. But I really do it because I'm not doing it. I'll say this. I'm not doing it necessarily because I love that part of it. I'm doing it because I love the end result. I love what, when the character is complete, and then I get to go and play and have fun in front of the camera or on stage. I do the hard work for that.
Do you want to touch on the difference between, because you've definitely done some theater as well as TV and film. You want to touch on the differences between, working as an actor in those different mediums and how you kind of have to play a different switch with that?
Well, I'll say this, people always ask me what I like doing more. So I love doing movies. I love movies. I like television. And I, when it comes to stage, that's the medium that I'm most frightened of. And that's only because, as actors, when you're developing your character, and when you read something brand new, you got to figure it out. What does it all mean? What is it saying? What's the big picture? What's the big message? What are we trying to teach? What are we trying to say? Right? And all that takes work. So you're doing all that work. Now, when you're doing a movie and you're doing TV, you get to do all that work at home, right? Behind the camera, I mean, yeah, at home, you get to do all that work developing your character, building your character in a mirror, wherever. But when you're in the th when you're doing theater, you're doing stage, you're doing all that work in front of everybody. So it's like you're back in class, right? It's like you're in class. You're doing all your bad work in front of everybody to get to the good work. And that's terrifying, because you got to be super vulnerable, right? And so that's the only thing about the process, like the theater process, that it always scares me. But I love performing in front of live audience and feeling the energy, that you're getting back, because that energy drives you when you're on stage and you're feeling that energy. It drives you, and it feels good. It feels good. It's very different from TV and film, where you're performing for the camera, and the camera's this cold, dark place. Not only that, but you're surrounded by a bunch of professional crew people. You've got producers there, you've got directors. This is on set, you got producers, you got the director, you got these professional, all these crew people, and they're all watching you do your thing. But outside of the producers and the director, they're really the ones, and really the director is really the only one who's paying attention to performance, which is the thing that's important to you. But all the other crew members, they could care less. You know what I mean? They're checking out they're making sure that what they're doing is on point. You know, the set dressers and the gaffers and the grips, and they're making sure a light's not about to fall on
Yeah.
your head, or that the salt shaker is still in the same place on the table, and all. So they could care less what you're doing as far as the actor is doing. And also the camera is like I said, it's this dark, cold place, but it has like a millions of eyes inside of it. So that's intimidating. That's intimidating in itself. The fact that you know inside this camera are millions of little eyes watching every single thing I do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you can't hide from that. Like on stage, there are tricks, there are things you can do where you can hide, you can cover up. In front of the camera, you can't cover up anything. Like everyone sees what's inside your eyes. Everyone sees exactly what you're doing. If your eyes twitch, if your nose twitch, anything that happens in your face and your body language, people see it. You know what I mean? Because the camera can detect it. So there's positives and there's negatives to both. I like working in film more and TV more just because, like I said, I get to do all my homework at home and then show up in front of and show up on set and then play and have fun. I don't have to do all my bad stuff in front of everybody.
But I was just going to ask you to talk about your first experience on The Wire and how that was for you as your first major TV series and what kind of experiences you had there.
It was an incredible, like, it was a really special show, and it was a special
Yeah.
experience. I'd been around for a long time. I mean, The Wire came, I was on The Wire in 2001, 2002, I think. I'd already been in the business since
Yeah.
1991. So I'd already done, you know, television shows and movies and all that kind of stuff. But I'll tell you, having grown up in Baltimore, The Wire was very special to me. Even from the first read, I was like, I kind of felt like I need to get this part. Because when they sent it to me and I read it, I'm like, I literally know these streets and these people. This is how close I am to The Wire. So the Barksdales family operated in the Lexington Terrace projects, you know, the high rises, they call them on the show. And they talk about it, the Lexington Terrace Project. So when I was a kid growing up in Baltimore, I played Little League football for the Lexington Terrace squad. I literally lived like 5 blocks from Lexington
Wow.
Terrace. So that's how close I was to, that's how close I am,
Yeah.
you know, and how close I was growing up to those stories and what was actually happening. So when I read it, I'm like, all right, I got to get this part because I literally know it.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was very grateful that I got the part, very lucky, fortunate, blessed to get the part. But as we were shooting it and I'm reading it, it was so different from anything I'd done before, from anything I'd ever read before, from anything I'd ever seen on television, that I thought it was going to be the biggest bomb. I was like, this show is never going to
Right.
last. This is going to be, you know, where's the chase scene? You
Yeah.
know, I'm like, when are the cops going to arrest the bad guys and all that kind, you know, the regular network stuff. That's what I was expecting, and it wasn't that at all. It almost felt like reading it and actually doing it almost felt like the show was playing out in real time. And that never really flies in Hollywood, you know, like you know, that medium trying to play something out in real time, it's very hard to do. It really doesn't work. So anyway, that's what it felt like. So because it felt like that, I was like, this show is just gonna bomb. And then somewhere midway through the season, I think we all, like all the cast, started to just feel like we're doing something special. It just started to feel like we're doing something different and something special, and this is really amazing. And then we knew, like we just knew we had something, that there was something there. And it was fun. You know, you realize that at a certain point, we all realized everybody was bringing their A game every day. We realized that we were telling important stories and the reasons why these stories needed to be told, and why the creators, David S. Simon and Ed Burns, were telling these stories and pointing a finger at certain issues. And we wanted to be true to that, honest to that. And because of that, you know, like I said, everyone brought their A game, And you could tell that the show was elevated because of it. Yeah, so it was just a it was quality material, working with quality actors and quality production team. It was one of those series where the stars just aligned, you know, and that's always amazing when you're a part of something like
that. Yeah. And do you want to kind of touch on how much of a first that was for television? And of course, you had a lot of black sitcoms and, you know, the 60s, 70s and into the 2000s, really. But this was the first time you kind of saw black faces on screen without all of the stereotypes of
all the stereotypes, slapstick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you take what it really did, what the show really did was it humanized a certain sector, you know, of people that no one really knew about. Like even me, I didn't really know, you know, like you drive through the neighborhoods. And the reason that I didn't really know was although I was a part, I lived in it, I wasn't really of it. You know what
right.
I mean? Because I grew up in it, but like I said, I was studying classical music and I was doing my thing, you know, in school by the time I got to high school anyway. But you know, you drive through these neighborhoods, you see these corner boys, you don't really know what's really going on. You don't really know what they're, you know, how they feel about the world, really, about their, you know. So, and a lot of people on the outside, they just don't know.
Yeah.
So this show did, you know, an amazing job of just humanizing the people. And what we see on television, I mean, the difference between a show like The Wire and a show and shows that were generally those cop dramas on television are, you know, what do? The bad guys are the bad guys. The cops are the good guys. The cops go in, bust the bad guys. That's it. End of story. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But The Wire said, hey, let's look at the bad guys and let's see why they're bad. Mm-hmm. Why do we call them bad? You know? And let's see that, hey, they're not bad. They're good guys too. They're just trying to survive in a system that was set up for them not to win.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're just trying to get by. And that's the thing that I actually love about David Simon and Ed Burns and George Pelicanos and Nina Noble. Their characters, you know, are just people who are just trying to get by.
Mm-hmm.
When you look deep at their characters and deep at their shows, you know, all their characters are just people that are trying to survive, just trying to make it, just trying to elevate, overcome whatever those hardships are. And those are things that appeal to me as an actor personally. Those are the kind of stories that I like to tell.
We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode. Yeah, do you want to talk about next how, since you've been in this industry for a long time, have you been on a lot of television shows from the 90s to the 2000s? Do you want to talk about the big changes you've seen in the industry and the difference between television, you know, in the early 2000s versus something like Deuce that you've just kind of finished up with?
Well, as far as the changes in TV, television is a lot grittier now, which is, I think, is a positive thing. As far as, you know, TV looks so much different now than it did back in the day, just because you have less scripted shows on television.
Yeah.
You know, you have game shows and more of that, you know, reality shows on TV now. And you have all those competition shows on TV now. But I will also say this, you know, now you also have cable TV, whereas back then you didn't have cable TV.
Mm-hmm.
You just had the networks. You know, so you have cable TV now, so that makes things that makes the landscape a whole lot different. You also have all these streaming, you know, networks now, so that makes the landscape different.
Absolutely.
So back in the day where, and I'll say this, you know, it wasn't that long ago back in the day, because I was pitching this show once, and I was meeting, I had a lunch with these two producers, white producers in Hollywood. I was pitching this show that starred two black men, and one of them during the lunch came out and he was like, "Lawrence, you know, television nowadays is lily white."
Wow.
And this was not that long ago, right? Well, maybe about 12 years ago. He was like, "Television nowadays is lily white. So it's going to be very hard for you to get your show done,
Yeah.
right? Because it stars two black men." And he was right. And it wasn't until, very recent, like now you start to look at network, but also you look at cable shows, and there's more diversity. Like you do see a whole lot more diversity now than you did back in the day in the 90s, like when I was started out. A whole lot more diversity on television now. There's still ways to go, but comparatively, when you compare it to the past, there is more opportunity,
Right.
now. And also, like I said, there's a lot more networks giving cable TV and streaming. So that makes a difference. Does it make it less hard? No, because there's still a whole lot of actors out there, and everybody's still competing against one another. And I would say that the real battle now is getting more people of color behind the camera. That's where the real battle these days lies, getting more people of color behind the camera, and also just telling more c stories about people of color and true stories and being, real about the stories. Not just telling white stories and then having, the token person of color in your story,
Right.
but also, telling more stories about people of color and making them just as important,
Yeah.
because there are a lot of stories to be told. Someone asked me recently who in history, like what story would I like to tell or character I would like to play as a historical figure? Like what historical figure would I like to play? And honestly, there is no historical figure that I would like to play. I would like to be me personally. I would like to tell the story of that person that nobody knows about,
Yeah.
that did some major thing, like I remember going and seeing the movie Glory and not even knowing that there was a black regiment. Like I didn't
Yeah,
know in the
right.
Civil War. Like people didn't know,
Yeah.
which is crazy, So anyway, those are the kind of stories that need to continue to be told. Like they need to be dug up and told truthfully, honestly. And those are the kind of things that I want to do, and those are the kind of things that I want to see. So we could see more of that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Those things just weren't being told on television back in the day. And nowadays, now today, I think there's more of an opportunity to do that kind of stuff. I don't know if I answered your question
No,
or
you
not,
did.
but
Absolutely. Yeah. Kind of going off of that, do you want to touch on, was there ever any moment in your career where you realized that, oh, my people aren't getting the best jobs, or they're not as seen as,
Oh yeah,
yeah.
no, absolutely. From when I started to now, yeah, there were absolutely those moments where, I went through that whole stage, especially early on, where all the roles for people of color were, the bad guys, the gangsters, the homeboys, the
Yeah.
hoods, the dude who robbed somebody, the dude who was the crackhead, the dude who was, and I did all that stuff. I played the crackhead. I played the leader of the gang.
Yeah.
I played, the member of the gang. I did all that stuff early on. You didn't see many lawyers and doctors and all that. But then you see, time started to change. And then I did get the opportunity to play the lawyer and the opportunity to play the doctor and to play the cop.
Yeah.
It's so yeah, I have anyway. I have definitely seen, and of course, if you talk to a cat who's been around longer than me, he's seen even more changes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So now, yeah, I mean, things have changed a lot. Things have changed a lot. And I think now there are more opportunities where you will see people playing. You can see people playing doctors and playing lawyers and playing cops and playing people who are important citizens in the communities, you know.
Yeah. Now I want to ask you, now with this question, you don't have to give like the specific instance, but I'm just interested to hear if you've experienced any kind of, personal racism towards you, and whether it was on set or during a rehearsal or anything at any point in your career where you've been personally targeted.
Well, two things. I'm going to tell two stories. One story is, or maybe three. So one story is, one time I was doing a show. It was a popular show, and the star of the show, this white guy who was a well-known actor, we were on set, and he sort of pitched a fit about something, you know. And then after he pitched his fit, and it wasn't huge, but he pitched the fit, and then they got him what he wanted, you know, they made it happen what he wanted. And then he leaned over to me and he's like, you know, he said to me, sometimes you have to act like a star or else they won't treat you that way.
Wow.
Right? But what he failed to say was, because he probably didn't know that, he thought he was helping out a young black brother, was that that only works for me because I'm white. You know what I mean? Because, you know, a person of color tries something like that and then they're branded difficult to work with, or, you know, who do they think they are? And I run into that sometimes where, you know, I mean, there are times, you know, I've been around the business for a long time and there have been instances where people have treated me like they don't know that. Or, you know, and I look very young for my age, so sometimes people think that I'm younger than I am, and they'll try to treat me a certain way, and I won't allow it. And I do get that kind of, you know, oh, who does he think he is? You know, particularly from, well, no, just I get that sometimes, you know, I get that. And so there are times where that happens, but there was also this one time where I was playing a gang member, and the guy and so I had to have a gun, and it was this one scene where I'm pointing a gun at this person. So anyway, the props guy who was handing out the guns, he comes over to me and he hands me the gun, and he goes, "So I know you probably already know what to do with this."
Yeah, I've heard that one a lot, sadly. Not from me, but I've heard actors say that.
As if, you know, because I'm a young guy of color, I've handled a gun, which I hadn't handled a gun. And I didn't hadn't I hadn't well, I had no idea what to do with that gun. But anyway, there have absolutely been times where, you know, I mean, with me, I'm a pretty chilled guy. And I know how to listen. And when to just listen, and when to, you know. So I haven't run into a whole lot of issues. But I will say that there are moments on set where I need to just stand up for myself or stand up for other actors on set. And it's always tricky doing that because I know that I'm always right on that line of being classified as, you know, somebody who is either a troublemaker or hard to work with or whatever they want to say about me, just because I'm standing up for something, you know, that someone's doing wrong, or standing up for someone who's being treated a certain way, or standing up for myself and people are treating me or not treating me in a certain way. And treating, you know, my white counterpart differently. So yeah, I've experienced it. And what do you do with that? You know, you, like I said, you fight when you can. And then there are times when, like I said, I'll just listen, and then I'm there to do my job. For the most part, it's work for me, and I'm there to do my job. And what matters to me is family. So I've managed to to get by
Yeah.
and do
That's
what I
the
need to
right. You
do.
gotta do what you
Do what
gotta
I
do.
need to do and keep moving, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And you kind of touched on this earlier with the lack of people of color behind the scenes. So I'm interested to hear, has there been any experience for you where you wished there was a black director or that black writer who was doing the work in whatever project you were a part of?
You know, so me coming from the classical music world, I'm like used to being the only brother in the room.
Yeah.
Like I'm used to that.
Right.
So when I'm on a set, if I'm the only brother around or whatever, most times I don't pay too much. Like I said, I'm there to do my job and get it. So it becomes normal, you know, when you're in a scenario and you're like, you don't even think about it really. You're just like, all right, this is what I'm doing. You don't really think about it. Now, could things and would things be like, I've been on films, I've been on sets where the majority of the people are people of color. And of course, I've been on sets where it's not. Is it any more or less professional? No.
Yeah.
No. They run just the same. Now, I've heard stories of people who were on sets with majority people of color, and they were like, it was a hot mess. But then I've also heard stories of being on set with people who are, you know, not people of color, and it's still been a hot mess. So, you know, it's really about when it comes to having people of color on your set, it's really just about the professionalism. It's about being professional. You know, no matter who you're hiring, it's really about being professional. And I think that it should be, but it should be fair. You should have, you know, a mix of people on your set because you can have just like you can have a Caucasian set designer, there's a person of color who can do the job just as well. It's about equality, you know, and I would like to just see that on every set.
Yeah.
Mix it up, man. Just mix it up. You know what I mean? And everybody brings, when you mix it up, you have different cultures. Everybody brings their own background, their own thing to the mix. That's what's going to make it more colorful, and that's what's going to make it more fun. That's what's going to bring the magic to your project, I think.
Yeah, I
I
think
think.
after this year too, hopefully there's more diversity and people's eyes are open to the fact that, black people or just people of color in general aren't given the opportunities that they work for. That they have to work probably twice as hard as someone who's white to get that job,
Exactly. So they deserve to be working just as much, if not more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, do you want to talk about, so you've done the play Top Dog Underdog by Susan Laurie Parks.
Yep.
And I'm interested to hear what your experience was like with that show, and especially since it's a two-person show, and it's kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of like a, not like a spin-off, but an extension of what people know about, Lincoln and Booth, and putting it in the black experience. Can you kind of talk to that?
You said it's a spin-off of what now, sort of? Like of what?
Oh, I was just saying it was kind of an extension of Lincoln and Booth, but not really, but it's kind of
So my experience with the show, it was a very hard show. We were the George Wolfe, the legend.
Name drop.
Yeah, directed the production that I did with Harold Perrineau. So he casted us to do this West Coast tour of the show. The show was still fairly new. Like it was the Broadway production that just ended, and Jeffrey Wright and Mos Def were going to London with it. And they decided to do a West Coast tour. So George had got me and Harold to do it, and Susan Laurie was there around a lot. And it's crazy because I'm actually right now trying to see. If I'm trying to see if I could acquire the rights to do it on Broadway to revive it
Yeah.
on Broadway, which would be fun. But actually doing the show, the way George directed the show, I remember literally trying to find spots in the show to just breathe.
Yeah.
Like we were moving at such a fast pace during that show, Harold and I, that I was like, all right, I'm going to take a breath right here, and then I'm going to take another breath right here.
Yeah. Gotta mark it in.
You know, And I remember at the end of the run, I remember feeling like I'm never going to do that show ever again. It was so hard. Basically, so you got a show that, and I played Booth at the end of the show kills his brother, So you're playing a character who murders his brother. At the end of every night, you're murdering your brother.
Yeah.
You're having a mental breakdown and you're killing your brother every night. So you're talking about major decompressing after the end of that show. And the show, just the language of the show, the way she wrote the show, the rhythm of the show, it's just genius. It's
Yeah.
just pure, it's just genius. And she's a genius. Susan Laurie Parks,
She is, yeah.
That was another show. It was just a blessing to do. I didn't know it at the time when I was doing it. What a blessing it was. It's something that I look back in retrospect. I remember doing an interview about it back in the day, and they were like, how do you feel about it? I'm like, this is going to be that show that in 20, 30 years from now, I'm going to go and look and watch the show and go, wow, look what I could do.
Surprise yourself. Yeah.
Wow, look at me up there. Look at that. Because it was just such a it was such a challenging show for me during the time. And it's just such a great show. So yeah, my experience with it was I had a hard time, but looking back on it, it was amazing, amazing, amazing. And I think the show needs to be revived on Broadway. Redone. Now is a perfect time for it just
Yeah.
because of all of the that it deals with and the whole Lincoln and Booth, just the way she played with that and the way she played with the whole, the cards.
Oh yeah.
It's just magical.
Oh yeah.
It's just
It really is.
magical.
Yeah. That's a play at definitely at the top of my list that I want to be in one day, so hopefully.
Hopefully, and you'll get a chance to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So to kind of end the interview, do you want to talk about what's most important to you, both as an artist and as a person, and what drives you and what motivates you to get through life on a daily basis?
Well, my family motivates me to get through life on a daily basis. My wife and my kids, they motivate me to get out of bed every day and do what I do, whatever it is. If I'm going to get out, if I'm on my way to set, if I'm on my way to stage, or if I'm on my way to fix the leaky faucet,
Yeah.
what keeps me going as an actor, artists will tell you this. They're just like, there's nothing else I want to do. You just wake up and there's nothing else you want to do. That's it. And right now, there's just nothing else I want to do. And trust me, there's some days I wake up and I'm like, Lord, can there be something else?
Yeah.
Can you put something else in me to want to
Yeah.
do? But at the end of the day, I'm an artist. I'm a performer. I love doing it, and that's what I want to do. I want to, as an artist, the projects that attract me are projects that in some way I feel like educate, that teach us in some way how to be better people. How to be better people for ourselves, how to be better people to others, how to love ourselves, how to love others, how to overcome adversities and achieve goals and dreams. Like those are the kind of projects that appeal to me, and those are the kind of characters that appeal to me, storylines that appeal to me. And I've been fortunate where I've been able to be a part of those types of projects. So if I could just continue doing that kind of stuff, doing quality work, those are the kind of things that motivate me and get me out of bed. As far as just being an artist,
Yeah, that's awesome.
and those are the things that I'm, yeah, those are the things that I'm always looking for. Are those always the things that I get to do? No, sometimes because, it's work. So sometimes as an artist, you just have to you have to pay the bills. Sometimes you just have to pay the bills. And sometimes that means doing some crappy show.
Yeah.
or some, whatever. But you got to do what you got to do, and you got to try to, as the artist, make it mean something for you. Even if it just means I'm doing this show to pay the bill, but pay the bills, but I'm not going to suck because, I'm only as good as my last thing. And if I'm sucking, then somebody's going to be seeing this, watching that. Whatever motivates you, man. I know that a lot of actors and a lot of acting teachers, they say things like, you have to love it. You got to want to do it. You got to love it. And you do. The reasons why you love it and you want to do it can be different for every single person. You could very well love it for the money. You could love it for the fame. You could love it for, like I said, educating and teaching for the medium. You can love it for what. All that matters is that you bring your A game when you show up to the table. Nobody has to know why you're bringing your A game. The purpose is you can do it. You can love it because, you can do it because you want to support your family. You can do it. Nobody needs to know the reasons. All they need to know is when you show up to do the work 100%, to give your best, to tell this story, to do some justice to your character. That's all that really matters.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can follow me on Instagram at Gabe J. Moses. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get updates on new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Until next time, I'm Gabe Moses, and Black Artists Matter.